Donald Sherwood. This recording is part of the oral history project carried out by the Suffolk Horse Society in 2013 with advice from Cambridge Community Heritage and a generous grant from the Heritage Lotteries Fund. In the recording you will hear the voice of Mr. Donald Sherwood describing his memories of the Suffolk Punch heavy horse. Donald is an ex-Barnardo's boy and child horseman. The recording was made by Jeff Hallett, who is a member of the Suffolk Horse Society. The date of the recording was 8th of March 2013, and it was carried out at his home in Ipswich. The duration of the recording is about 58 minutes. This is Jeff Hallett here making a recording of Mr. Don Sherwood in his house. Today's date is the 8th of March. Sit that thing there between us and forget about it.
So what actually is the object of this project?
The idea is to take recordings of people who actually worked with the horses.
Right.
As a working thing.
There's not too many left.
There's not too many left. That's why we thought we'd better get on with it, quite frankly.
Well, I'm 79, and I was 8 years old when I was with a horse. I was with him for 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
What was your actual date of birth, if I may?
15/1/34.
Right, lovely. And it's
yeah.
Don or Donald, is it? That's
right, yeah. I prefer to be called Don.
Don, you prefer,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you said, how old did you say you were when you started again?
Eight. No, 10, sorry, 10 down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first time I went in the harvest fields, yeah. Yeah.
And was that with your family, or was...
No. Well, I've got the story there.
Yeah.
Would you like me to read it?
That would be very good. That would be easy, wouldn't it?
Right, well, this one is... It's a subtotal of my horse experience, actually. Yeah. And I called it Farm Horses Remembered. My first memory is a horse was sitting on the backs in the harvest field, moving from shook to shook, when the pitch on the ground shouted to the loader, "Hold tight." I well remember feeling very important and pleased myself. I was 10 years old and paid a penny an hour to the farmer. This was in 1944 in the harvest holiday. I was helping to get the harvest in and helping Britain to win the war. There were Italian POs helping out as well. Before I helped to get the harvest in, I was in the fields with other boys chasing rabbits as they ran out the corners of being cut. We all had a knob stick of some sort, which we'd cut from the hedgerow. We had notches cut in our sticks just to show the number of rabbits we'd killed with it. I had two cuts in mine, just to look good, as I never caught a rabbit. When I eventually did catch one, the farmer claimed it was his, as it's on his land. "Any wildlife on my land belongs to me," he told me, as I protested. I thought this was most unfair, and I made up my mind to get a paid job. I asked the farmer nearest where I lived if he'd give me something to do. I well remember him asking me, "What can I do on his farm to be of help to him?" I knew there was nothing I could do. But I didn't want to admit it, so I said, "I can learn to do anything that has to be done." "Can you now?" he said, laughing. "Would you want paying for all this learning?" I told him I thought we paid something, as I'd be working while I was learning. "I'll pay you a penny now and see how you get on with it," he said. I thanked him very much. He told me to be on the farm at 7:30 next morning. "Don't be late and bring your ninjas with you," he said. Next morning, bright and early, and despite not being able to sleep too well, because of the excitement of starting a new job, I reported to the farm. I knew all the farm workers, and they knew me, but I got plenty of leg pulling from them. They all said they went out and worked hard when I was there, and they'd be the first to finish harvest this year. There's plenty of banter like that. I was told Mr. Mutt would be in charge of me. He was the head horseman. He lived two doors from where I lived. He was soon warning me of the dangers on the farm. One of the first things he told me was never to approach a horse from behind. Always let it see you and walk down the side of it, talk to it gently and patting it. I wish he'd told me the same about cows as well. went off and gave me a right old kick one day because it's darker and behind. The only sympathy I got was I should have known better. And I suppose I was right. I only ever helped get the harvest in. There weren't much a boy could do until the cutting and shucking was over. I'm pleased to have been part of that life, if only in a very small way, and to have known the people and to see how they worked. It was a very hard, tough life working on the farm those days, and I'm glad I didn't have to spend the rest of my working life working as they did. The change from horses to machine was for the better, but what an upsetting time it all was when the horses were shot to make way for the new dawn. This is why I'm writing this down. But it seems to me that nothing much has been said about this very sad period in time. I can only write about how I felt and dread to think of the sorrow of the men who worked with them day in and day out. It was a time when strong men wept, but they'd never shout or talk about it. And it's not the done thing to show emotion over a working animal, not even a dog, but the affection was there. The horse I got to know were called Brisk, Duke, Prince, Punch and Flash. Brisk was my favourite horse. She was the smallest and a Suffolk Punch. She was aptly named, as was all the other horses. Brisk was very a brisk walker and a very hard worker. She could really lay at the shafts and pull all her might when the going got rough. You just could not believe she had it in her. She is pretty to watch. She is very friendly and always seemed pleased to see me. And of course, Brisk was always used for extra work when she should have been resting, such as getting the farm workers getting a load of muck on, or a tumble load of wood on a Saturday afternoon. I really loved that horse. I wouldn't have dared say so then. I know she liked me too, for I'd love to rub and pat her soft nose and let her rub it against my face. I'm sure she was trying to talk to me with her breath, and I would talk to her. I felt sorry for her, and as with all the other horses, because the flies that was always worrying them. I was doing this one day when Mr. Mallet told me sharply not to do that. They're working animals, not pets. He said, you mustn't get too attached to them or any other animal. After that, I'd just have a crafty talk and a pat with them when I thought nobody was looking. Duke, he was a big, shy horse. He was 22 years old and very slow. He had massive feet that bang on the ground as he walked, and somehow he had a Duke look about him. I couldn't fuss over him like I did old Brisk. They seemed too important for that sort of thing. So I just talked to him and pat his nose and asked, how are you today? Hope the flies are not too troublesome. And just talked to him as though he was a grown-up. Duke, for his part, he'd put his nose to my face, but he wouldn't stay long. He was a grand old horse. I remember the one end of one harvest I was with Duke. We was pulling the water cart. That's very light work. We was going to the meadow. And we'd leave a full water cart there for the cows and bring the empty one back. And I'd fill it up at the farm pond with a hand pump. I was filling the water cart one day when one of the farm workers said, how are you getting on? All right, I said. But old Duke is very slow. Don't you know how to make him go fast? He asked. No, how? I was thinking I was going to get an insight into the mysteries of horse handling. Go and get your pitchfork and I'll show you. I'm not going to hurt him, I said right quick. No, you're not going to hurt him. I ran into the barn to get my own pitchfork. That's the one with the cut-down handle. I ran back with it in my hand and I said, now what? You just lift his tail now and again, that'll make him go. That's how I ended up leading the horse on the water cart with a pitchfork on my shoulder. What a laugh that must have given the men. Only lifted his tail once, that didn't seem right thing to do, old Duke. In the end, the farmer's sister, who was also my Sunday school teacher, suggested I put the pitchfork back in the barn. Prince, here's another shy horse, and a very proud horse, stuck up, I called him. When I tried to lead him, he'd chuck his head in the air and pull me off my feet. Mr. Mallet said it because he didn't like being led by a small boy. So to get over that, he tied a piece of cord to the bridle, and I'd walk behind Prince's head holding the cord. Prince was leading me. That suited him, but it didn't suit me. And I weren't really happy about it. And of course, that had to be talked about 8 times. I'll pretend not to hear, and I pretend I weren't there. I must write about the time when they got me really worried. It was about drinking milk from a cow's teat. We used to do that when the cow was in the meadow. I'd help them let us milk the cows. I'd have a squirt when I thought nobody's looking while the cows are grazing. Some man had died at an early age. I know this for a fact. I talked about it to him, and people saying how sorry they were. There we were eating a bait, and somebody said, "Sad about old so-and-so." "Yes," another man said, "they found out what he died of." "Oh, what was that?" "He had this big ball of hair wrapped round his heart. It stopped it dead," he said with a laugh. "What sort of hair?" I asked. "Cow's hair," he said. "How did he get cow's hair round his heart then?" That's our next question. "Well, he used to drink milk straight from the cow's tit." "No, never," he said. They were saying to each other. By now, my ears had really pricked up and I was listening most attentively. No one was taking any notice of me. "Well, you thought you'd known better." "Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear," they were saying. I could stick it no longer and timidly asked, "What's the difference in drinking milk from a cow's tit or from a bottle?" "Why, all the hair is strained out before it goes in the bottle," they all seemed to say together. I'd help the cow, and I didn't know the hair was strained out of the milk. "When's that done then?" I asked. "You know, you take the milk in the back and pour it through that thing." "Well, yes," I said. "But that cools the milk. It also takes the hair out, didn't you know that?" "No, I must have shown how worried it was, because after I'd been drinking milk from a cow's tit, I was in a very quick no." "That's all right, then you got nothing to worry about, have you?" I never had milk from a cow's tit again. Punch, another Suffolk Punch, and a very friendly horse. He'd let me ride on his back and lead him. He was a bigger horse and brisk and stronger. But he wouldn't do his best without a lot of persuasion. He had a mind of his own. He would just lay forward in the shafts and wouldn't make any effort to pull. He was just pretend to. When you did that, you knew you were in for a hard time with him. You'd make a saint swear, the men would say. But he liked me, and I'd make a fuss of him. I come young one day when a load of wheat sheaves got stuck in a rut on the way to Stagget. Punch was in the shafts, and that was it as far as he's concerned. We were stuck, and no matter how much hollering and swearing had gone on, he'd just lay forward and hardly strain a muscle. Punch was just being awkward. This had begun on for about 5 minutes when I arrived on the scene and stood looking at what was going on. The man with the load was fed up, and he said to me, "Go on, boy, see if he will for you." I was just packed and made a fuss of Punch. And holding the bridle, I just said, "Come on, Punch, I know you can do it. Come on, boy." With that, Punch just walked forward and we got moving at any effort. I let him rest the weight of the Stagget and had a smile on my face the rest of the day. At bait time, the same old thing. The men were wondering amongst themselves whatever would have happened if I hadn't been there. No one seemed to know. They was all stumped. Finally, I was asked, "Well, what would I have done if Punch had been out to pull the wagon out?" "I'd have put Brisk in the shafts," I said. "She'd have pulled it out." "Well, the boy seems to know," they were saying. "Yes, we're lucky that we are. All that sort of talk." I was quite comfortable with it. It was all said in good nature. Flash, he had a white lightning flash on his forehead. That's how he got his name. He was a young Suffolk Punch and a very nervous horse. He couldn't be taken past the houses where there's washing hanging out, as the flapping of the wash would frighten him. And he would bolt no matter what load he was pulling. So his limit as to where he could go, his fear was put down to some bad experience as a colt. They must have seen the master come, the men would say amongst themselves. "Yes, he bought a pup there," would be the reply. I knew they'd wait for me to say something, but I weren't going to fall for it this time. So I agreed with them. The master bought a pup when he bought Flash, and left it at that. Flash was friendly enough with me, though I could never flap my hands in front of his face. I'd ride on his back and lead him. I couldn't brush the flies off his face in case he took fright. Mind you, it was a waste of time doing it anyway. The flies would just rise 6 inches in the air and settle down again. They're a constant worry to all the horses. Another happy memory is going to see the horse that I met on a Sunday afternoon when they was resting. I stand on the second bar of the gate and call them. They'd all look up at once, but Brisk was always the first to run over to me. The others would follow. Flash would run around in circles before coming over. Duke would walk as quickly as he could. The Prince, he would always be last, even as the closest to me. Prince would let me rub his nose, but he wouldn't. I had to reach up to him. He wouldn't lower his head to me. He was the first away when I left, and Brisk was the last. She'd stand at the gate and watch me. I always felt obliged to wave my hand to her. I helped for 4 years to get the harvest in. This was the last 3 weeks of the harvest holiday. At 14, I was being paid tuppence an hour. For the first 3 weeks, I was working on the market garden. It was a 10-acre site. Had no horses, everything was done by hand. And I was being paid fourpence an hour. I didn't mind a drop in pay, so I'd bear the horses. On the second day of me starting, the men conned me and asked them for pay rise, saying I was never older, could lead the horses through gateways, ride up the stacking, and back the horse and wagon in position to be unloaded. They convinced me I was worth it. I didn't tell them I was getting forwards now in the market garden, I was only there to bear the horses. But an hour late, I was asked to farm the stacking. He didn't seem too pleased with my request. "Who put you up to this?" he asked. I shuffled my feet. I didn't want to get anybody in trouble. So I said, "Well, some of the men did say something about it." "Well, now," he said, looking at me. There was no smile on his face. He didn't seem too pleased. "You tell some of the men you're now being paid fourpence an hour, and that includes yesterday." I said my thank you to the farmer and left with mixed feelings. I could see he wasn't very happy, but I was pleased to get fourpence an hour rise. Didn't take long for news to get round. There's plenty of questions at bait time. What did I say? What did he say? All that sort of thing. They didn't tell him. I told him he didn't look too pleased when I told him. And he looked totally riled. But he couldn't have been if he doubled your money, is it? "Well, he was," I kept saying. "I bet he's up to something," somebody said. "Perhaps he's going to double all your money," I told him. "The rent more than likely," somebody said. We'd meet in the stack at midday on Saturdays to be hand our envelopes. I was always last. "I haven't put yours in the envelope today," he said. All the others were looking on. "It's because there's quite a lot, so I'd better count it out in your hand." Out goes my hand. 45 hours at fourpence an hour, 15 shillings, is that right? He asked. "Oh yes," I said. "I've been counting all week." He counted out 15 single shillings. Boy, now my underhand was out. "How's that?" he said. "Thank you very much," I replied with a huge smile. The farm workers looked on amazed. You're most welcome," he said. "But now the farm workers can't believe the eyes or their ears." As the farmer walked off, he turned to me and he says, "Oh, by the way, harvest is nearly finished. I shan't be wanting any more. Thank you very much." That took the smile off my face. Then he turned to the farm worker and said, "We mustn't get above ourselves, must we?" The farmer was the only one with a smile on his face when we left to go on. That was the last harvest I was to do and the last time I was allowed to lead a horse. I was still allowed to go on the farm and see the horses. They was always pleased to see me in their various ways, Brisk being the most pleased of all. Sadly, it was the last harvest the horses were to do. It was happening on all the farms, the horses being shot to make way for machinery. It was a talk at my school about various horses being shot that day. That dragged out over several months. I couldn't believe it was ever going to happen, my horses. They were still getting my Sunday visits. I just wouldn't let myself think about it. I well remember two boys said one day the horses being shot on my farm. Where I worked, "So what?" I said. Why should I want to know? They aren't the only ones. I tried to say as I didn't care. I never did like school, but that was one of the worst days. I just couldn't wait to get up the farm. Those boys knew my Sunday visits as they'd laughed about it some days earlier. That evening I ran straight from school, changed my shoes to welton boots, just gone up the farm, I said, and I was away. I ran straight to the stable and there stood Plash. Never had I been so pleased to see him. He must have wondered what happened, all the fuss I was making of him. Wasn't long before the others come in. I helped Mr. Muttett to bait the horses and brush them down. I told Mr. Muttett what had been said at school as he wondered what I was doing there, and asked the horse was going to be shot. He said he didn't know. He had now gone round the other side of the horse to brush it. I'll ask the farmer, he said. It'd be best not to say anything to anyone, he told me. There's going to be change, and we'll leave it at that. His voice wasn't very loud when he said that, and he carried on to say, I want you to go home now, get some up for your tea time. I cleaned the brush and comb I was using, put in a rack. I went round to say goodbye to Mr. Muttett. He turned away and started to brush the horse's neck. I called out goodbye. He never looked round, he just nodded his head. As I made my way home, I knew what the future was going to be. About months later, I told the same thing. What? Again, I said. I thought they're all dead. Told me a month ago. Well, they're going to be shot today. My father's talking about last night. As soon as school was over, I was away up the farm. I put in several visits recently. This time, I never made the stable. There was the head horseman, two farm workers, and the farmer's sister in the yard, where we used to go through to the stable. Where are you going? The farmer's sister asked me. I'm going to see the horses, miss, I replied. We haven't got the horse anymore, she said. I expected it, but it still shook me. I stood rooted to the spot. I went hard to Briscoe hurt, but I couldn't speak. You'll have to go home, she said. You'll have to go home, the farmer's sister was saying. Her voice was very sharp, and it pulled me out of my trance. Can I look in the stable, miss, I asked. No, you can't. There's nothing to see. Now, go on. I didn't like the sound of her at all. I looked at Mr. Muttett and the other men. They never looked at me or one another. So I looked anywhere but. I knew I was going to cry, so I turned and ran off as quick as I could. It must have been 2 years late when I found out they put the kettle on the gate to stop me. If it just stopped me from going in, so I turned up until it was all over. As it happened, I was riding 5 minutes after the horses left, after the lorry had left with the dead horses. They were all waiting for me, as no one wanted to see me on their own. How different it had been today, with mass news coverage, pressure groups, animal rights activists. Results have been the same, no doubt, but it wouldn't all been forgotten about. I think there should be an international working horse day to remember the working horses and all we owe them for pulling the whole civilised world to an age where machines took over. I should just like to keep things in order. There are children working on the farms in the 1940s. They would have been the sons of farm workers. The father would have been responsible for them, and not many would have been paid. There was dangerous places for the unwary. I'm not even a true son of the soil. I'm a Geordie by birth. I mean, at the age of 4, I was put into Bernardo's home and they sent me to Suffolk. I arrived in a somewhat battered and shot state due to the bad home I'd been put in 4 years earlier. I didn't know then, nobody's told me since. I was in my early 30s when the truth hit me. All I've described of my young life on the farm was done out of kindness by the farmer, his men, the horses were an added bonus. I call it kindness from afar.
When did you write all that?
I wrote that as soon as I retired. I retired in January 1999. Yeah. And that's February 1999.
That's right.
I wrote to this man. He is the author of these books.
Yeah.
Do you know him, do you? Are you aware of him?
No, don't think so. Sure. Woodward.
Woodward, yeah. So I wrote to him and asked him what he knew about the horses being shot.
Yeah.
He didn't know anything.
Ah.
So he said, well, what do you know? So I sort of briefly said something over the phone. He said, well, you write it down. He says, send it to me. He says, and I'll send it to Sheffield University. So that's his letter from me. To me, a letter from Sheffield University.
Ah, you're talking there about George Ewart Evans. Yes.
Mm?
Talking there about George Ewart Evans.
That's right, yes.
Yes, that's very special, isn't it?
So, as I say, that is my total knowledge of the horses.
So what did you... How did your career go on from there? What did you end up doing?
Oh, I ended up at Cranes, which I now pulled down.
Oh, right.
I was there 33 years. I was a pipe fitter there. What happened? When I left school, I kept on that market garden until I was 18. That's 10 acres.
Right.
And I was called up, obviously, for National Service. And National Service was 2 years. Well, if you like to sign on for another year, they pay you another 7 shillings. National Service pay was the third, actually. National Service pay then was 15 shillings. Another 7 was 21 shillings. Yeah, so I got 21 shillings a week.
Yeah.
So I signed on for another year, extra 7 bob.
So what is this about the rabbit? Why the farmer took it away from you? Did that make you very cross, or what did that have to do with you getting paid for work?
Well, we were chasing rabbits, and that was wartime, so you want them for the table. But you could also sell them to the butcher. You know, you might get about fourpence for one, up to fourpence.
Mm.
He'd sell them for about 18 pence, one and sixpence, something like that. And so you could make money for them. That was as handy as the table. But I weren't too sharp about it. But why he took it away from me, I can only describe to it that I was abroad. I was 2 villages away from where I worked, where I lived. That was abroad. Although I think it'd be fair to say that in the 40s, that sort of thing was really died out. That was people usually say that with a laugh on the face, but prior to that, you know, that was classed as abroad, a couple of villages away. Mm. And so I was a stranger there. And so the boys called me into going there because, the rabbits are going to surrender to me, as simple as that. So I was a stranger to him, really. And, you know, I weren't from his area, so he took it away from me. So that did annoy me.
But the other boys, they were able to keep them,
well,
they?
Well, yeah, because, you know, the farmer knew them.
They were local.
And their fathers must probably work for them, the aunts and uncles and everybody else, you know.
Yeah. Now, with my horse, you know, he gets well patted and talked to and everything. So what's this about not showing emotion to working out?
Oh, right, yes, well... Mr. Murray is a kindly man, and I think that he didn't want me to get too attached to the horses because they weren't mine, they weren't actually his, but he looked on them as his because he was responsible for them. Mm. But he didn't want his small boy getting too attached to the horses, you know, as it really meant, you know. That's like getting attached to somebody else's dog. That's not yours. Yeah.
So it wasn't to do with sort of the discipline of the horse doing what it was told and that sort of thing.
Yep. What was?
Was it to do with the horse, you know, having to do what it was told, not arguing, that sort of thing?
No, I don't think that was that. He just didn't want me.
Right.
as a small boy to get attached to. He knew he might not know he was going to be shot, but he knew that, you know, I'd be away from him.
Yeah.
And he didn't actually want the horse to get too attached to me, I think. Vice versa. So he was a kindly man. All the men were kindly. And he didn't say it just out of spite or anything. He said it for my own good.
Yeah. But the head horseman then, he was like the foreman. He was the boss of the farm workers, was he?
That's right, yes.
So you'd have the farmer, then the head horseman, then,
that's right.
Then the rest.
That's right, yeah. He was responsible. He would get the horses ready for whatever sort of work they was going to do that day, and hand it over to the man who was going to do it. If it was Harren, he'd hands it up for Harren.
So who was there first in the morning?
Edward Horseman was. Oh yes, he was there really early. Yeah. He got bait horses, get them ready. Yeah. And the thing about the Suffolks is that they can go all day. They just had the breakfast and they can go all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Shire horses, which I couldn't understand at the time, they had to go to have a midday break.
Yeah. Was there a time when the harness got cleaned, or what happened about that?
Well, I wouldn't be too sure about that, but yes, the harness had to be cleaned, but having said that, not polished. No, that was purely for work.
Yeah. And going back to the cow and the drinking the milk, had somebody watched you, do you think, or what had happened there?
Well, the country is a country, and everybody see everything. And you're in the meadow, and I suppose somebody must have seen me having a squirt from a keg's tip. And I didn't like people doing that. I used to say that the badgers have been stuck with them, and you get all sorts of diseases off and all the rest of it.
Oh, yeah.
But the old keg's tip, say they had to be washed down before they milked and all the rest of it, you know. So I suppose that was that, you know.
Yeah.
But I fabricated that story, but that somebody did die. I think he was a shepherd who had died, and he'd actually died, I think, making fuss of the lambs, so they say, you know.
Right.
But having said that, that come to me when I went to Hoseley. There was a lamb being born. I'd got the vet there.
Mm.
She had a young girl, and I was having a devil of a job with it. You know, I gathered quite crazy. And eventually got it out and cut it free, and that was stillborn. So she's swinging around, and goodness knows what, you know. And she's given it the kiss of life. Right? And I thought of this fella then. I thought, I wonder if he'd done that sort of thing. I wonder if I'd killed him. I don't know. I most probably didn't.
Mm.
But, you know, he died for whatever reason he died. Or, but he left a young family. That's why people are upset. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're setting about working on the market garden. You did that at the same time, did you? Or?
Yes, yeah, I used to work on the market garden in the evening, like when I left school. When I came home from school,
yeah.
I'd go straight to the market garden and work there. Yeah, that's all to get a bit of money. And like I say, everything was done by hand, but there's always something for me to do. And
so they didn't have a horse there to.
No. The only bit of machinery he eventually got was a rotavator, biggest rotavator.
Yeah.
We had glass houses and goodness knows what, you know, and the cloches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We used to grow stuff. One of the things we had was grow melons. We used to send them to Covent Garden. Poopart's was the name.
Yeah.
I think I might have said that right. Poopart, yeah. And He'd get 10 shillings for them, which was a handsome sum, really. But he was saying that on the hotels and that they'd charge 10 bob a slice, you know, at the table. But and letters and stuff we used to send. I used to go to Aspel Station. I used to take a van, had a little van, Ford van, and take it to Aspel Station, take it to Stowmarket Station, and then from there on, that gone to Covent Garden.
Right.
Yeah, because that was a right old car, but That's when the House Boys League was about then. The price of food. That go to Covent Garden. That'd be looked at by the middleman and that. And he'd put a price on, and that could invariably come back to where it left. You know, it was a real carve up, really. But he couldn't sell. He couldn't. When the price of letters got to it, weren't worth it, and he got loaded, he'd have to dig them in and dump them. They'd go on a compost heap. He couldn't sell them locally or anything like that. You know, that was part of the contract, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, when the horses were shot, was that the knacker came for that? And what
I should say farm? So. That was all done and over when I got there.
Yeah, where was the farmer headed?
So,
Where was the farmer?
Poor old boy. He had an urgent appointment. He wasn't there, but his sister was, and she was there really to support the men, because the men knew what they were doing. Yeah. But she was there just really for support, you know, yeah. And which speaks well of her, and there you are. That's where a woman is stronger than a man. Yeah. And but nobody despised the farmer for not being there. They all understood why, you know. And nobody ever took the mickey out of him or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I was full of praise for the farmer's sister. Yeah. And she weren't a rugged woman, not working the fields and stuff like that. As I say, she was a Sunday school teacher type, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But she was there, and she was the strength, and she was the only one there to speak to me, I think. that was upsetting.
Of course. Yeah. And when you were schooled and that, did they know what you were doing with the horses? Did they appreciate it, or what was the thought of you at school?
At school, all the boys then was doing some sort of work or something, yeah, rather. You know, everybody really, really out of work. I mean, they'd even break up a class for boys to go and pull the weeds out the corn and that, just before it's being cut, you know.
Yeah.
That's before the insecticides that some come about, you know. So it was a big riddle with thistles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'd have to go and pull them up. And of course, the headmaster always got a load of pheasants and game and all the rest of it. But I was just sort of laughing in general. I went to see the horse and take the mickey off me, really. Mm. Sort of thing, you know. Yeah.
But, and how did the chaps with the horses get on with the cowmen? I mean, is it all the same team sort of thing, or did they do their separate jobs?
I done separate jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he never had anything to do with the other. That was a full-time job for him. I think we must have about 20-odd cows or something like that. I used to supply all the milk round the houses.
Mm.
I lived at Winston.
Mm.
And he'd do Winston part of Debenham, I think. And there was probably a bit of Petter delivering milk, you know. Yeah. And but the cowman, he was... I'd help him out. I don't actually how he come but help. But that took me all the time to milk a cow when he milked a lot of them. And he still come to get some more milk out. So, yeah, when I saw he helped, I didn't really help. But, you know. As I said, that was out of kindness they had me on there. To be honest with you, the horses, they knew what they was doing. So they didn't want to move and shook the shook. As soon as they heard the words, hold tight, they'd go to the next one. You know,
yeah.
And I was there on the back. I thought I was doing something, yeah. And they let me think it, you know. That was kindness, because I wasn't a hell of a sight when I got there.
Because you'd come down from another part of the country, hadn't
you? Yeah, yeah. I was from Cambridge, you know, and I don't talk about it too much. Can't talk about it too much, but that. I was, that was terrible, and I weighed, Mr. Maddox actually weighed me. She took me up there, up the farty way. There weren't scales net about like there is nowadays. And he put his belt round me chest and lifted me on these scales. And I weighed 2 stone. I was 8 years old. At 14, I was only weighing 6.
Yeah.
And weren't until I got married and settled down, I started to lose weight.
Yeah.
You can see she's done me well, look.
And
So really, that was out of kindness. Yeah. I had no doubt about it.
But you said some days you'd go up there as well just to see the horses.
We had to go to Sunday school. Being a doctor and hard boy, you had to go to church every Sunday, and yeah. You had to go to Sunday school. And this farmer's sister, she run that, so we had to go there. She used to take us there in Austin 7. There may be 6 of us piling away. And she's always like this steering up. And I used to think, why do they do that? Look at it. But because I'd found out I got myself a 4-day car, that was linkage on the steering.
Mm.
And a linkage would wear.
Yeah.
And so you guys, she's always compensated. And you'll see it on the old films. They're driving the car and you'll see they keep going. So you had to compensate, yeah.
Some of the horsemen had quite a reputation as singers or players or instruments.
No. The Italians, they used to sing to us, and they'd sing the opera. They would sit there in Arbusfield having a bite and that, and they'd get up and sing. I think one or two of them was actually amateur opera singers, you know. But I really liked singing. We ain't got a clue what I was singing about. But that sounded good. We used to clap like Billy afterwards. Mm. But they were very friendly, the Italians. They didn't want the war. They just didn't want it. Mm. You know, they stuck their hands up as soon as they got a chance. And who can blame them?
Mm.
But we had some Jerrys. But we didn't like them at all. They'd lost the war, that's obvious, you know. And all that was still going on. But they had to talk about the next time. You know, that arrogant lot of... next time, gonna shout us the next time. Yeah, and they were like that, and we didn't like them. And the men didn't like them, so they said, we don't want them, we have the Italians.
Mm.
And they were just one of us, the Italians were. If it weren't for the prison uniforms they wore.
Yeah.
Down great yellow patches on the back and the knees.
And going back to the horses, did you come across any of the sort of secrecy that people talk about?
No. They wouldn't have imparted that sort of knowledge to me anyway. I did know about it because I used to talk about it amongst ourselves. And one of the things is about getting the horse through a particular gateway that. In a doorway, the damn thing won't go on that. So they got this bod, and he pulled out his pouch and he rubbed his stuff down the side of the door, and in went the horse and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And all that sort of thing. I used to listen to it, you know. Yeah.
Hmm.
Right, shoeing the horses. Did you have to take them down to the?
Yeah, they'd go down to Debenham there for sure. No, we lived at Winston. The farm was at Winston, which is no longer there. It's been swallowed up. That's sad, really, as more than swallows has been raped. They raped it. I went there one day, and I used to get days off from work, and I said to her, let's go to Winston. I said, I'll show you where the horses and that were, and all the rest of it. Well, we parked up, and we walked through his gateway, past his hedge, and we suddenly hit with this, that prairie, you know, and I just can't believe my eyes. Had ploughed every plaything up, filled in the ditches, and had just stretched miles and miles and miles, it seemed. And everything had gone. Everything had gone. Yeah. Yeah. That was heartbreaking. I just wish I never went there. But there you go.
Well, you've really prepared a lot there. You've covered all the sort of bits I'd put down anyway, this question.
Yeah.
So you've done very well with that.
Yeah, that's right.
Brilliant. Good. Brilliant article, a very good account there. And what we'll be doing with this, you see, is collecting them all. I edit the sounds and take out
right.
sound of any of us coughing or bangs or whatever. So we'll have a record anyway, so that'll be kept. And then from that we can take out, you know, bits to talk about, you know, compare one chap's experience with another.
Oh, right.
And we'll have a presentation to the to the Horse Society and to other interested people like the local museums and that up in probably Trinity Park. Because we have to get all this finished by the end of the year.
Oh, right.
So at least, you know, there is an end in sight. And we're going to talk, I don't know how many people in the end, but probably 20, 30, something like that.
Oh, right, yeah.
Good collection all round the horses.
Uh-huh.
But it's fascinating, you know, your account as a real youngster doing a lot with the horses.
That's right, yeah.
And remembering it so clearly. And as you say about the horses going, because, you know, we've now had, well, I'm on our fourth Suffolk Punch now, and it's terrible when they have to go.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah.
And I've been lucky because I've been working a couple of times, and my wife said to deal with the knackers there or something.
Yeah.
So, but people are generally kind anyway. Yeah.
But really, putting it in perspective again, that was just more or less the end of the war. Of course, you've got all the horrors of the concentration camp and God knows what about. You know, that really overrid what was happening on the farms. Mm-hmm. And that. I've never have read anybody else who actually say, you know, the horse has got shock.
Mm.
You know, that absolutely, obviously. And things that burn in your memory. After I had for dinner, I was saying, what did we have for dinner?
Well, that's brilliant. And this is... I've done a little note here, which is just explaining, you know, why we've done it very briefly, and also asking if you wouldn't. So I've got a copy for you and a copy for me.
Right.
If you would be very kind and say that you agree to, I've said here, thank you for agreeing that we can record your memories and use them as described, giving your consent below. So in other words, you're just giving your consent.
Oh, right.
Saying I can actually use this as a recording.
Oh yes. Right.
And you'll have a copy to keep anyway, and you're gonna. Sign it. These are the same on my one, that's just exactly the same.
I'm just glad you.
I'll keep that.
Make
a cup of tea,
then.
Yes, please.
Do you take sugar?
No sugar, thanks. No.
Right. Now, if I say the word Sealy to you, Sweley, you do. Does that mean anything?
Sweley.
Yeah.
Well, Sealy, I know for making tools and things.
No. You heard of Sealy Suffolk, haven't you?
I'm not from Suffolk, I'm from Dorset.
I heard
of Sealy Suffolk. Oh, yes,
that's right.
Yes.
Well, I am Sealy Suffolk.
It says here about holy.
Yes.
As well, which is the context I'd heard somewhere.
That's a bit complicated, really. Well, I think it is, but there you go. And also, that's not Sealy Suffolk, that's Sealy Suffolk, which means quite the opposite, really.
Yeah.
Hard work, industrious, kind, thoughtful. Henry Cross. You know Henry Cross?
No.
He is in the...
George. This is George
that's
Cross.
George Cross has wrote that.
Yeah.
And I saw you'd better tell me, not offhand, no doubt, Whether he's put any in the Suffolk Punch book where you keep record.
Oh, the stud book.
Stud book, yeah. It's a very interesting book. A bit hard work reading. It's interesting the fact that people like myself is interested in the Suffolks, and Henry Cross won the first to put the to get the name in the stud book. he was deeply. And this gives an account of Henry Cross, which writing letters and so on, and accounts from his diary. I give account of Henry Cross's life.
Right.
You know.
So what time is that? We're talking 1836.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But his grandson has wrote it, George Cross. And here we go, look. Suffolk Stud Association. There's a Suffolk Horse Society, was called.
That's right. That's where it started, as that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Herman Biddle.
Yeah.
Well, I've just this morning been handling some of them, so.
Oh, right. Well, Henry Cross is in there with,
yeah,
with that. And, let's say his grandson wrote it. He was a businessman. There's also a picture of Henry Cross.
He's a prosperous looking gent, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, he was. He wasn't, he weren't. He was in the debtor's prison.
Oh, really?
He married a couple of times, wealthy women, but he had no idea about money. Grandson said he thought when he borrowed money from the banks, you know, that was his money. And it'd have been all right, the day and age we'd just gone through. That's all. I don't know whether you'd like to take this. And
I'd like to have a look at it.
Yeah, somebody might be interested in it.
Oh, yeah.
Right, this is in the... Where's the spiritual home of the Suffolk Punch?
Ufford.
Hmm?
Ufford.
No, not called... I call it George Cross.
Yeah, because that's the next door village to me, you see.
Oh, is it?
I live in Pettistry, as I think you may know.
Oh, Pettistry, right. Yeah, next port of call is Woodbridge. The spiritual home of the Suffolk Punch.
Well, no, because the Crisps horse of...
He was the breeder of the
first
one.
He was the stallion, the first stallion in the stud book.
Yeah.
They all trace back to him.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And that's Ufford, yes.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, that area, you're right, the Woodbridge area.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you'd like to...
I'd love to borrow it and have a look at it.
Well,
I
think after you've read it, you might find it hard. Well, he's just mentioned his grandfather's by the way, and he's talking about his life in business and how he started off, and that's what the book's really about. Just talking about his life actually.
Mm-hmm.
How he ended up prosperous businessman, and he ended up. Latter years, buying himself a horse we call a Stella, and he just end up saying he's going to start a stud horse,
yeah,
and hope he'll come up to his grandfather's standards.
Okay, yeah.
And that's how it end.
Right.
So I'd be interested now if there is a George Cross in there, as you imagine there is. I just imagine he must have done well at it.
Yes. So, let's see what date the book was.
Published 1937, I think. That's there in Roman numerals somewhere.
First published April.
Yeah.
So that's 19...
37.
1939. Did I know which book to look in, you see? So I know I've got stud books from that time.
Oh, right.
1939 was just before they, you know, really dived.
Right, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Interesting.
Oh, you know now. Well, if it weren't for the Home Office, I don't think there'd be any Suffolks left, would they?
Well, they were one of the breeders that kept going. There were about five or six in late 1940s, early 1950s. One or two around, like Felixstowe and Woodbridge Way.
Yeah.
But they were down to less than 6 foals in a year.
Yeah.
Then, and now we've got back up to 50.
Yeah.
40, 50, which is quite good. But the trouble is now we've got to find a market for them.
Right, yeah.
There's only so many eccentrics like me who are prepared to feed out hay, because you can't do a lot with them unless you have a forest.
Well, there's only the woods, and I don't suppose we've got a terrific lot of woods, and
you
don't want too many horses, all the woods we've got. Cover all that.
And we try and I try and encourage people to do things with them. You know.
They want working.
Yeah, they want, because that's why they didn't handle them as a child.
That's right.
Because they were tired after a day.
That's
of work
right.
Anyway.
Oh yes. Yes, they took me for my 70th birthday. I'm now 79. For my 70th birthday, my family took me to old Tom's place on Norwich Road, on the old Norwich Road.
Tom Warne.
Tom Warne, yeah.
You know Tom.
And introduced me to the Suffolks and so on. Anyway, we had a look around his farm, and that was all very interesting. That was that was like the farms were, the all mud and stuff, you know.
Stringing.
That's right, hell of a mess. Yeah. And that took me back, because he got his horses out, and she was able to put them all the stuff and all the rest of on. Got your grandchildren there as well, you know, that's all interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, "Well, take you for a walk." Well, I did, but I got COPD, my lungs have had it.
Yeah.
That's simple as that. So I started walking this and that, walk right quick, I couldn't keep up with it. Not puffing and blowing. Poor old horse, that was right ready to go for a walk and all. You know, and that's really upset. I leaned into and turned it back. I said, I can't go no further. But no, that did walk, and that surprised me, because as you say, well, the horse was pulling a load, and so they were slow, and that was, you know, they just plodded on.
Yeah.
But my old Brisk, she'd walk fairly quick. And and being a lightweight, that's why they allowed me to sit on the bags.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'd been much heavier, they wouldn't have allowed me to sit on the bags.
Yeah. Can I take a photograph of you? Would you mind that?
No,
don't. Just a photograph.
Not me glasses, do you?
Doesn't matter.
Hmm?
Whichever is easy for you. That's,
oh, yeah.
That's fine. You just... I'm just going to do another one, if I may. Get one a bit closer up. Yeah, that's a good one. Brilliant. Lovely. Yeah, I've got the one horse, a gelding.
All right.
He's a lovely boy. I had mares before. I must say the gelding is easier to handle.
Right, yeah.
He's, you know... They don't get mare-ish, the geldings.